order. And the CLA has noted the roll. We have a quorum. We have 2 minutes that we need to approve. So let's go. Representative Bennett, will you approve the first set of minutes for April 28th of 2025?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Minutes are moved. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are adopted. Second one we have is February 19th, 2026. Who wants it? Representative Mueller, will you move the minutes for February 19th, 2026?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All right. Minutes are adopted. Members, we have to do a little bit of housekeeping. And so Chair, Co-Chair Joachim and I are going to introduce our members and staff.
Yes, hi. So I don't know if I will just introduce that. I have the new staff introduce themselves. Go ahead with our new DFL researcher, and then we have a new CLA as well. So the Lauren Savas, go
first. Hi, everyone. I'm Lauren Savas. I'm the new DFL researcher. I'm covering for Mars.
I'm sorry, in the microphone, please. Oh,
excuse me, sorry. I'm Lauren Savas. I'm the new DFL researcher while Mars is out this session.
Very good. Welcome.
And I'm... We know.
Oh, I'm
it was the same in Texas. Like, they're not.
We have indication the mics are on, so go ahead.
And my name's Isabel. I'm going to be the CLA for a bit. I'm super excited to work with you all. I've worked with some of you in the past, so excited to be here.
Welcome.
Oh, and then also, why don't we just have a reminder, our nonpartisan staff introduce themselves again. We can start on this side of the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Christina Pera from House Research.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Tim Strom from House Research.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal.
Okay, and welcome to our staff. And then we're going to go over to our partisan staff. So I'll go to my left first.
Sure. My name is Janelle Bolk. I'm the committee legislative assistant.
And then Isaac.
I'm Isaac Pilon. I'm the House GOP researcher for Education Finance.
And Mr. Withers.
Jody Withers, committee administrator for Education Finance for the GOP side.
And I have the privilege of welcoming back the pages. So Natalie Wavra, did I get that right? She didn't want to be Smith today. She wanted to be Wavra. Didn't try to make my life easier. But welcome back by popular demand, and we're glad to have you. And we have a new page, Kyan Corder. Did I get that right? Thank you. Welcome to our pages. Members, with that, you have the agenda in front of you. We are going to have a couple changes based on test fire and availability. So we are going to go to House File 3492. Representative Duran, would you please approach the test fire stand? And then we'll be moving House File 3602 to the end. Representative Duran, while you're getting ready, because you're not a member of the committee, the House will move House File 3492 with the chair's intent to lay the bill over. Representative Duran, when you're ready, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for having me today to offer House File 3492. This bill expands the opportunity for additional grant recipients for an existing building cybersecurity grant program included in the 2023 education budget. The program provided more than $24 million in one-time funding for public schools, including charter schools, for security-related facility improvement.
Representative Duran?
Yep.
Nice job, but I think you've got the bill switched.
Switched?
Yep, we're on House File 3492. I think, at least going by the description, it sounds like you're on House File 3495.
I was switched around on my...
blame it on the chair. The chair was totally not ready for today. No, that's on me. So, Representative Duran, two-year bill, House File 3492, and again, it's the chair's intent to lay the bill over.
Okay, so we're on House File 3492. All right. So, this is an opportunity for us to do what we can for public or school safety and offering an opportunity for us to expand on this, but not only that, but build on this. One of the biggest things we have in today's society is the feeling of school safety, being able to and coming up to find ways that we can actually build on that. House File 2492 is going to allow us to take some money from an existing project that ended up halting for last year and being able to bring that to Minnesota as a way to give out one-time grant funding because of that. Now, this also includes charter schools, non-public schools, including tribal contract schools to help pay for security upgrades and enhance school safety. With that being said, I do have some testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Duran. You have two testifiers, Mr. Olson, Superintendent Bemidji, who I believe is remote, and Casey Ryerson, is that correct? Did I pronounce that right? Principal at St. Philip's School and the remote as well. So we'll go to the remote testifiers. And we're going to start with Superintendent Olson. Are you on? And Superintendent Olson, if you're speaking, you're on mute. And Superintendent Olson, we can see you if you're ready to begin your testimony. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony when you're ready. Okay, should we go to the second one? Oh, there we go.
Try again.
Superintendent Olson, we're going to try it again. Bemidji's not that far. If he talks very loudly, we might hear him.
Mic check.
While we're waiting, if I could ask nonpartisan staff, you just give me a quick overview of the bill as well to just supplement what Representative Duran offered us.
Chair Kreisha, members, House File 3492 is a grant program funded with state aid. There's $25 million appropriated for the program coming from the state general fund. That's accompanied by a reduction in $25 million from the 2023 appropriation for the Northern Lights Express train between Minneapolis and Duluth. That's where the funding comes from for the bill itself. Individual grants are of up to $500,000 each, with the grant process going through the Department of Education. And with those grants, the available recipients for the grants, as the author mentioned, include school districts, charter schools, the cooperative units serving students, tribal contract schools, or non-public schools. So in a nutshell, Mr. Chair, that's the that's what's in the bill. $25 million appropriated at a tracking cost in total of zero, but with the offset, but that would be a ways and means decision, obviously, with the grants of up to $500,000.
Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Yes.
And we'll wait one more seat. We'll see if we can get this, and then we can go to member questions. I can come back to testifiers if I need to. But okay, Superintendent Olson. Casey Ryerson to the testifier. If you're available, we're going to try you next.
Can you guys hear me?
There we go. Welcome.
Perfect. yeah, like you mentioned, I'm Casey Ryerson.
And Mr. Ryerson, I believe we have images, but check your mute, please.
So I am unmuted.
Okay. We believe it's on our side at this point.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to go to member questions. Please understand, I may have to interrupt you if something breaks through. So, Representative Green, you're first on the list with your question.
You're first on the list for questions. My first one was for. Oh, I didn't put myself on the first list.
thank you, Chair. I actually had a question about the other bill.
Okay.
So I'm just going to hold off. I'll pass on to the next person.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Vernick, do you have a question for this bill?
Sure. I would just like to ask nonpartisan staff, sorry, I'm not sure if I understood or heard you correctly, but can this funding go to cooperative units that do not have students or serve students?
Mr. Strom.
Chair Krisha, Representative Vernig, let me just double check on that. In the first section of the bill, the reference is to a cooperative unit under 123A24 subdivision 2. So my mistake earlier, that is all cooperative units. We have about 33 cooperative units. Most serve students through some type of program, whether it's special education, vocational education, or an ALC, an area learning center. There are, however, a few cooperatives like the computer regions and a few others that are in that definition that don't have direct educational services but provide indirect services to schools. And let me just double check on the grant language. So in the bill itself, all cooperatives would potentially qualify. The commissioner would review them for the purposes of the project.
Representative Vernick, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. So I would just like to let you know, Representative Durant, I hosted some sessions, donut dialogues, with both chambers, bicameral, both parties, nonpartisan staff. And if there's something that I have learned from meeting with districts, is that grants are challenging. Not all districts have grant writers. And the way this is set up would disadvantage school districts that do not have a grant writer. And the fact that some of this money could go to cooperatives that don't serve students is a little concerning to me. So those are some of the concerns and the challenges that I see with this piece. I would hope that when you work with MDH on the prioritization, that it would prioritize students and really look at that equity from an equity lens of districts. I represent one that has a grant writer and can apply all the time, and I know that that is not true across the state. So just a comment, not a question.
Representative Duran, comments?
Yeah, thank you for that. And, you know, I understand that. I live in a very rural community, right, where we don't have the money. And this is the reason why for this bill is so crucial, is because we have an opportunity to be able to serve some of these schools that are disadvantaged and have the ability to reach out a little bit farther. In our current situation within the state of Minnesota, I would like to be able to give all the schools money for school safety. In my heart, I think it's in everybody's heart here. But the problem is that we do have disadvantages, and we do not have the ability to reach out and grab all the money that we can. Just like in my area, I'm in Lake of the Woods, very small. They're disadvantaged too. They're farther away. They don't have the opportunities that we do. So it's one of the things that we have to be very cautious of, obviously. But this is an opportunity for us to branch out and be able to extend this out to as many people as possible. So thank you.
Representative Vernick, follow up.
Yes, thank you. So the cybersecurity grant that you know is mentioned in the other bill, Lake of the Woods did apply for and has capitalized on all of the money. So that grant is distributed so every school district has a chance at funding. The grant application is quite simple. It's 8 to 10 questions, very easy. If that was the intention, I would have preferred that we put this on a formula, whether it was safe schools or the general formula. Competitive grants, I think, are very challenging for a lot of school districts.
Representative Dren. Okay. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for bringing forward this bill. Important area of discussion, for sure. I'm wondering, I was trying to look at the online 1.13 and 1.4. It references the subdivision, which then goes, I believe, to the safe schools revenue. So I guess I wanted to know if this bill at all listed some current effective programs at keeping buildings safe that are available, or if it limits to effective programs. For example, there's a system where you wear an item on your lanyard that can immediately call law enforcement. It locks doors. It does all kinds of notification things. Does this bill give any lists to schools as to effective types of things districts can purchase with these dollars, or is it pretty wide open?
Representative Duran.
I guess I would have to refer to nonpartisan on that, just to clarify. I guess I'm not.
And I'm going to go to Mr. Strump.
Chair Kreisha, Representative Varans, and Bennett. On the bill summary, it reprints the language of Clause 7 of the Safe Schools Revenue, and that reads to pay for facility security enhancements, including laminated glass, public announcement systems, emergency communication devices, which I believe is what you're talking about potentially, and equipment and facility modifications related to violence prevention and facility security. So I think it's a pretty broad definition in answer to Representative Bennett's question, that things like lanyards that have security connected to them would be included in that.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Bennett, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. I should know better to look at those numbers like you do, so I appreciate you pointing that out, number 7. But this is I believe this is a really good start. I would like to see something enhanced in the future when we have more dollars to work with, and actually have some systems vetted so we make sure districts are purchasing evidence-based items that will actually work. So thank you.
Chair Youakim.
Thank you. I just have a quick question for the author, and actually in the other scope of what Representative Bennett was saying. Is there a reason why you only picked the one clause 7 out of the like 8 or 10, or out of like the 10 items that could be used for a traditional school safety levy? It's on lines 1.13, 1.14 of your bill.
Representative Duran. And if you'd like, we can also bring Mr. Strum back in.
Yeah, I was just about to actually.
Mr. Strum?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, in the Safe Schools Law, as you are aware, there are the uses of revenue, and there are currently 10 uses of revenue, and those range from things like drug abuse and gang resistance education to security and SRO costs and counseling costs, as well as the physical equipment and facility modification costs. So those are all within Section 126C44. But in terms of Clause 7 on Item 7, that's limited to those security enhancements that are listed there.
Chair Joachim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. So that was my concern, and that was my question to the author and why you picked just hardening schools. I know you don't serve on our committee, but we had a very moving bit of testimony last Thursday from principals, administrators, social workers, counselors, parents, community members about the trauma our schools are facing, not just from school shootings, but from the occupation by the federal forces that we've had. And they're talking about how much they need mental health supports, which is what you can use a school safety grant for, and not just hardening schools. I also have a concern that some schools might want to hire an SRO for this, but when you just point to Clause 7, that couldn't be allowed. So I like the idea of us doing school safety grants. I really do. I think there's a way we can do it so that everybody has a chance and make it as easy as the cybersecurity grants. But I would want districts to be able to decide how they use those. So if you have a school that already has the things that are in Clause 7, but they still need an SRO or they still need some mental health supports to recover from a trauma, they would not be able to use that grant for this. So I would like to hope that we could work together to broaden this a little bit as we work forward with this bill. So I guess I was just wondering, it'd be nice to hear the author's intent and why you just picked the one thing.
Representative Duran?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's because I think as a whole, we need to be able to establish a little bit more hardening of schools, in my eyes. All that other stuff is very important. And I wouldn't say like it's less important than anything, but we have to start somewhere. And this is a great start for us to be able to protect the people, our most vulnerable people in our society. This is a good area for us to be able to show that we're willing and able to start giving the opportunities for these schools to harden and make it harder for people to want to do some harm to our kids. You know, most of the people inside here have kids, and I wouldn't want anybody to go there and feel unsafe. And this is an opportunity for us to do that. This is an opportunity for us to step outside and say, hey, this is an ability for us to make it harder for people to want to do this stuff. So I feel this is a great start for us, and I feel this is a great bill to be able to allow that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. And I do appreciate bringing this bill forward. I just think $50 million is a lot just to harden schools when we are lacking in counselors and social workers, SROs, and other things that really do help keep our kids safe. So hopefully we can still work on this together. Thank you.
Okay. And members, we're going to try the witnesses one more time. I'm going to go to Representative Bakeberg, and then I'm going to go Representative Hudson and Joachim to close. Representative Bakeberg? I'm sorry, excuse me, Representative Bakeberg, Representative Clardy, then Representative Ewick, unless you want to, you're okay. Okay, so Representative Clardy, I'll allow you to close if you're okay with that, or take the final one. Not yet. Representative okay. Bakeberg, just giving you a heads up. Representative Bakeberg.
All right. Thank you, Chair Cresha and members. Thank you, Representative Bedal, for bringing this bill. I think we have to be, everyone in the room would agree that school security, that keeping kids safe, is a bipartisan agreement. Now, how we get to that, we're going to have some discussions and debate about. Let's be honest about that. But keeping kids safe at school is a bipartisan agreement that we can do. So we have lots of conversations, lots of emotions. Chair Joachim, I'm glad that we're on board with SROs now, so that's a positive thing. So, but here's the simple fact. We have to focus on the priorities of what we can get done this session. I was recently at a It's called SCALE. It's a leadership group that meets in Scott County. And the schools, two school districts were there testifying or of sharing their perspective. And they talked about, frankly, here at the legislature, we don't do a good job of thinking from a systems standpoint. When we make a decision here, how does it impact over here? We have to do a better job of that. And the only way to do that is to actually listen to educators when we're in the education sphere. Okay? Listening to people, the actual boots on the ground. Representative Bedall, you know, one of the reasons that I'm excited about this bill is because it provides one-time dollars through grants. Of course, all of us would love to be able to pass a bill that we can make our schools safe. All of us would love to do that. We had a bill for it last year. There's some more bills coming, but we can all agree that that's a priority. But the simple reality of it is there's not funds for it. We don't have the money to do it. So we have to prioritize, and what this bill does is takes money from something that was killed last year, the Northern Lights Express, that's not moving forward. That is money that is available. We prioritize $25 million to make it open to schools, that schools can look at their individual needs and decide what is the best avenue for them and their individual district. Lake of the Woods has different needs than Lakeville. So they have to look at that. But we have to be honest about where our budget is at. And we have to start thinking from a system standpoint. Otherwise, we're not going to accomplish the tasks that need to be tasked. These are one-time dollars for one-time expenses. One-time dollars for one-time expenses. If a school goes out and hires an SRO, a counselor, a social worker, that's awesome. These are one-time dollars. And it would be foolish of that district to have ongoing expenses with one-time dollars. So thank you, Representative Bedall, for bringing a bill that prioritizes school security and keeping kids safe, and not just kids, and not specifying where, but it's all kids, regardless of where they go to school. All kids are safe. All kids should feel safe when they go to school. That needs to be the priority of this committee. If we do nothing else over the next few months, making sure kids are safe at school, regardless of where they go, has to be our priority. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. We're going to try the testifiers again. And Superintendent Olson, are you able to? I hear some feedback.
I am.
There we go. Now we have. Superintendent Olson. You are recognized. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
I'm Jeremy Olson, Superintendent of Majerus Schools. First of all, I apologize for the technical issues we had previously. I do want to talk just real briefly on some of the points that were brought up on school safety, because you are correct that school hardening is just one portion of school safety. We look at the mental health, you know, working with our students, communication, culture, making sure there's a culture in which students feel safe to report things that they hear, our SRO, and cybersecurity. Those are all components, but one of the components definitely is cybersecurity, the hardening of schools. And this becomes really important because the hardening of schools does require more one-time expenditures, such as, you know, whether it's film for glasses, locking doors, locking mechanisms. There's a lot of additional expenses that we do have in schools regarding the hardening of schools. And I do want to recognize, though, that the hardening of schools is not the only aspect of school safety. We have to be looking at all of those. But we also have some funding streams and some longstanding strategies that we're already advancing some of these other issues. So the reason that I'm really excited about this bill being brought forward is there's a lot of items that we have as schools, like I talked about, whether it's the film on glass, whether it's redesigning entranceways, whether it's redesigning offices to be more secure. Those are things that are one-time expenditures that I don't necessarily have one-time dollars for. I have dollars for some of these ongoing things like cybersecurity. I have some dollars for the SRO and some of those other pieces, but really getting to the heart of making sure that we have these one-time dollars for some of these large expenditure type items such as hardening schools, such as door security, such as redesigning offices. I think this is really important for Minnesota, and I really appreciate that you are looking at school safety and security. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Olson. And we're going to move to Mr. Ryerson. If you'd state your name for the record, and please begin your testimony.
Casey Ryerson. Did everybody hear me this time?
Yep, you're good.
Okay, perfect. I'm principal of St. Philip's School, Catholic school. I'm going to kind of go off of what Jeremy had just mentioned, too, that the hardening of schools is probably the most important thing right now, and there's money other places for support systems for mental health or anything on top of that. We have other grants and whatnot that we wrote towards that. But my purpose here today is as a non-public school principal is to just kind of reiterate what was already said by a couple people already, is that we're dealing with Minnesota's children right now. So part of the bill right now is that we're working with our public schools, obviously, which is the greatest portion of the children in the state, charter schools, tribal schools, and then the non-public schools. So as a non-public school employee currently, I worked most of my life in public schools, but now I'm in non-public, but I'm still dealing with children. And these are still children that are going to be the future of Minnesota. So depending on, it doesn't matter where they're at, they're still kids, and it's our responsibility, your guys' responsibility. So I appreciate you guys looking through this bill and giving it real consideration, because as representatives of the state, it is your job to make sure that you can do whatever you can to keep our children safe. So kind of going into it a little bit too is, you know, the hardening of schools, like it was mentioned, is the entrances to buildings. That's kind of somewhere in my world, we have a school that's shared with the community, right? So I have different entrances that we share with the church side of our school or the school side. So hardening our entrances and making that doable is wonderful if we can kind of separate ourselves amongst each other. But money's not there. So we're not asking as a non-public school for support and paying our staff, because we know that's not something that's going to take place. But giving us support as non-public schools to make sure that we can build an infrastructure that keeps the children inside of our schools safe is important. Both Jeremy and I are tasked every day to take care of hundreds or thousands of kids, and their parents are trusting us to make sure that they are safe while they're here. And a lot of times, unless the budget makes sense, or you have a large donation, or you have something, the level of enhancements that need to be made in most of the schools across Minnesota are unreachable without some support. So that's why I'm here. That's what I'm asking for. I want everybody to just kind of take a deep breath and understand that these are all children. They all smile the same. They all laugh the same. They all learn the same, or pretty close to it, right? So we need to do whatever we can to make sure that all of our kids in Minnesota are safe, because they are our future, regardless of what school they choose to go to when they are under the age of 18. At the end of the day, they're still going to be most likely paying taxes in Minnesota when they grow up and working for our state. So went through the most things that I want to. I appreciate everybody. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present in front of you too.
Very good. Thank you to Mr. Olson, Mr. Ryerson. Apologize for the technical difficulties. Members, I'm going to try to keep us moving. So,
Mr. Chair, is it okay if I have a brief moment?
Mr. Representative Quam, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to members, in my area, there are small districts that cooperate for special ed, and they have a different facility built and a different site. The tribes have schools. There are ones that are outside of the current law, and hardening those schools is needed, because multiple times I have heard in the writing and the research after a mass shooting of where they specifically picked a soft target. None of the school facilities in our state should be a soft target. So these funds and this bill will go to make those school sites hardened and safe for our students, whether it's on tribal lands or it's a cooperative between multiple small districts. When we overlook them, we are missing what we should be doing. So I thank the author for this bill.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Hudson, then Representative Green, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So very much appreciate the testimony we've heard today and the member comments. Particularly appreciate Vice Co-Chair Bakeberg's focus on prioritization and resources. And we do have some trouble with that, those concerns around here. The 2 points that I want to make is, number one, I think a lot of times around here, folks around the room will use the same word, but they mean different things. So when we use the word safety, we've heard a broad definition of it today, and we've heard what I believe is the narrow intention of what we're talking about with safety with this bill. Do I concede that emotional regulation, a sense of well-being, mental health services, that all of those things fall in the category of safety broadly? Absolutely, of course. But when we talk about priorities, my God, your physical safety, like physically being safe from a deadly assault, should be the priority. That's what this bill focuses on. And the other point that was addressed, I believe it was by Representative Vernick, about the lack of this not being ideal in the sense that it's a competitive grant, only certain schools are going to be able to get it, others will not, we're not treating people fairly. That sentiment, listen, we all had the moment in school when the teacher said, if you're going to bring chocolate, you need to bring it for everybody, right? That's a very noble sentiment when you're bringing candy to the classroom. When you're talking about keeping kids safe, I'd rather protect some kids than protect none, because we're waiting until we have the ability to protect them all.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. And Representative Green, quick closing comments, then back to the bill author.
Yep. Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you so much, author, for bringing the bill forward. I agree with what I've heard here from, you know, my colleagues. I agree that this is a bipartisan issue, that the safety of kids in our state is a number one priority. I also agree with evidence-based, what Representative Bennett talked about. And so one of the things that is concerning about this bill and the way that it's written is it's pretty prescriptive with how we harden schools. And I think that to you, Representative Hudson, who talked about the definition of safety, that's been worked on from input from groups all across our communities in terms of school communities. And so we're hearing this is, you know, part of the puzzle is perhaps changes to facilities. It's also more supports within the school for students. It's also making our kids safe with less guns on the street. And so there's a big comprehensive approach that we need to take with this. And so I just wanted to mention that, because I think when we start to prescribe things and look at it a little bit in a silo, then we lose sight of all the other important things that need to be part of this discussion. So for that, I can't. I just want to leave it at that. But I want to work on safety, and I know we'll get there.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Duran, two-year bill to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for everybody that had comments about this. One of the things that we all can agree on is this is not the fix-all bill. This doesn't fix all our problems. This doesn't fix the majority of our problems. What this does is it allows us to work on an issue that is so important in our community right now. This is crucial to the safety of our children. And for us to be able to allow a little bit of this money to go towards that school safety, to harden our schools, is something we all should agree on. There shouldn't be anybody that would hinder any way of this to go anywhere because of the fact that we're looking at children, the most vulnerable in our community. This is huge. This is not a fix-all bill. This doesn't fix all our problems, but it's a great start to making it harder for people to attack those that are most vulnerable in our community. And I think we all can agree on that. I think we all can work on this. We just need to, as a legislation, decide where our priorities are. And with the current climate right now in politics, I think we all can put aside our political issues and work on the things that we all can agree on, which is public safety for our children. This isn't a Republican and Democrat issue. This is everybody's issue. And I think we all can work on this together. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Duran. With that, the chair renews the motion to lay over House File 3492 with the intent to be in a future omnibus bill. Representative Duran, we're going to your second bill, House File 3595, or 3495. And the chair's intent is to lay this bill over with a future inclusion to a future omnibus bill. Representative Duran, to your bill, and I do not believe you have a testifier on this. We have one person listed as testifier, so I'll let you go ahead and start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I don't know if I need to restate everything that I said at the beginning of this. I apologize. I have it mixed up on my side here. Thank you very much for allowing me to introduce House File 3495 now. And this bill expands the opportunity for additional grant recipients for existing existing buildings and cybersecurity grants to include that was included in the 2023 budget. And I was hoping that nonpartisan would be able to walk down this bill as well for me, just for clarification on it.
Thank you, Representative Duran. And with that, let's go ahead and move to testifiers. I have Ms. Schneider, Caitlin Schneider, from Education Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. And you know the drill. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. And I believe you're testifying on a series of bills.
Is that correct? Correct, Mr. Chair. Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder. I am a lobbyist with Education Minnesota, representing over 84,000 educators in every traditional school district in the state. In the interest of time, my comments relate to House File 3493, 3494, and 3495. On August 27th, after the shooting at Annunciation, Education Minnesota released a statement from President Byron saying she was heartbroken and horrified. Our hearts are with the educators, students, and families impacted by this latest act of senseless gun violence. This fall, Education moved quickly and adopted a legislative position in favor of supporting a ban on high-capacity magazines and assault-style rifles. We strongly support gun reform and are happy to be on the record today and other committees in the building. However, Education Minnesota is firmly opposed to moving public funds to our private schools, as proposed in House File 3493 and 3495. Our public schools must be open to all students, including the almost 20% of our kids that receive special ed services. They must meet federal requirements on student testing, be ADA accessible, limit access to cell phones, take attendance every day, and many other requirements passed by Congress and the Minnesota legislature. Private schools do not have to meet any of these requirements. This is also about accountability. The School Finance Division at the Minnesota Department of Education takes its job seriously and is frequently auditing to make sure schools are spending their resources how you intend. In fact, they know if a school makes a general education purchase with special education money, and they know how to flag it as inappropriate and rectify that misspend, even when it's just $100. MDE does not have purview over our private schools, and the millions of dollars this bill would send to private schools would have no accountability. Money is fungible. Without auditing, we don't know if these funds are going to be used to make private schools safer or if public funds will end up as a donation. I understand that these bills today are a good faith effort to better protect our students, but I'm especially confused to see House File 3494 on today's agenda for two reasons. First, private schools already receive more dedicated funding for counseling services per student than our public schools. Through non-public aid, they receive $317 a student for guidance counseling services, and $85 a student for health services, while the only dedicated funding for public schools for these services is $34. That is less than 10% of what a non-public student receives. Second, last year, this legislature cut millions of dollars from funding for our school counselors, social workers, nurses, and psychologists. Altogether, this committee cut over $200 million annually from our public schools. Please do not further harm our students by removing the people who care for them. Instead, let us answer the pleas of students and families impacted by gun violence and pass meaningful gun reform. There will always be a softer target. This simply moves the desks around. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for committee's sake, and just so I ask, would you prefer that I, for the record, Ms. Schneider, or would you like to go by Caitlin? I heard you use both.
My full name is Kate Lynn Snyder.
Okay.
My first name is spelt untraditionally.
How would you like me to address you?
Ms. Snyder.
Okay, Ms. Snyder. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Snyder. And with that, we'll go to member questions. Okay. Representative Hudson, then Representative Joaquim, Vernig, and Bonner is who I have on the list for now. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the commentary from MDE. I do find it interesting that, and Minnesota, sorry about that. Thank you for correcting me. I do find it fascinating that the argument is that money is fungible in these private schools. Therefore, we have no way of knowing whether or not it's actually going to be used on cybersecurity. And I just wanted to pause because this is kind of a germane point to other things that we consider, particularly in this committee, that indeed, that's true, private schools do have the ability to spend money on the things that they determine in their judgment is going to provide the best experience for their students and serve their community, which might go some way to explaining why people choose to send their kids to those schools as opposed to the public schools that have to endure the shackles that we constantly place upon them with all of these categoricals.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Joaquim, Chair Joaquim, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm trying to see if I have my phone a friend. Oh, yes. I was wondering, MDE has done a lot of work on this grant that's already started to go out the door in one form or another, and just like maybe have a quick walkthrough about where the process is at.
Mr. Rooney, if you'd come up. Hello and welcome to the committee. Mr. Uni.
Good afternoon, members. Mr. Chair, my name is Dosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations in the Minnesota Department of Education. Chair Joaquim asked about an update on the cybersecurity grant program. As was mentioned earlier, this was passed in the 2023 legislative session. We had an original grant application window open for the program mid last year through the fall for the original $24.3 million that was set aside for the program. We advertised it through leaders' emails to all eligible entities defined in statute. It's structured as a reimbursable program so that districts and charters were able to make the expenditures and then seek reimbursement from us. 322 districts submitted an initial application. They were just LEAs, I should say, local education agencies. They were required to submit spending plans to ensure that their proposed use is qualified. We do have an FAQ document that lays out all of the allowable expenditures. I don't have those memorized. We did set some maximum amounts for LEAs to be able to be reimbursed in this first round because we wanted to make sure that every LEA that was eligible had an opportunity, not that some of our bigger LEAs were able to submit for a very large amount. So we set some maximums. We know that some of those LEAs that did ultimately get approved applications probably have greater need than they were approved for. We are allowing the eligible entities to submit required documentation through May 30th of this year to receive the final payments on June 15th, and this is for the first phase. This request from the initial grant window that we put out was about $14.665 million in requests. Remember, we did set some maximums that could, so the greater need could be higher than that, and we do expect to be higher than that. As of last week, the total payments made were $10.5 million. It's about 71.6% of the maximum allowed. And then just to note, payments are issued monthly to LEAs. The LEAs are not declining funding, although we're still waiting to receive a reimbursement request from about 26 of those that applied. Once we close this window, we will then open up a second window for the remaining 12 to 9 months that the program is available for all LEAs who were awarded in the first round and any others that have yet to apply to be able to participate in this program. And I think there's around around $10 million left that was unapplied for, and added to that will be any of the amount that's left from this initial $14 million that wasn't reimbursed by May 30th, or that were submitted for reimbursement by May 30th.
Chair Joaquim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Uni, for giving us that update. And when does that second grant window open, or approximately?
Mr. Uni?
Mr. Chair, Chair Youakim, that will open up mid-year sometime, probably in July or August.
Chair Youakim, good. With that, we're going to go to Representative Bernig. Bernig, and Mr. Uni, if you'd stay up there, you may get called on again. Representative Bernig, Bonner, and then Representative Bakeford to close. Representative Bernig.
Thank you, Chair. Again, just a comment. I have worked so hard on this cybersecurity grant, like meeting with schools, talking with MDE, trying to make sure that we could get the funds distributed. And under this grant, you can use it for liability insurance, but you can also use it for the items in 126C.44, subdivision 4, which were in your previous bill. So school districts, Bemidji, for example, is eligible for $80,000 and has requested $65,000, a little over that. Black Duck is eligible for $50,000, has requested $14,000. Clearbrook, $40,000, they've requested $12,000. As I mentioned earlier, Lake of the Woods, $40,000 and has request and got $40,000. Same with Kelleher, Red Lake. War Road is the only district that you represent that hasn't requested those funds. So I guess I'm really struggling with why, when we seem to have I went to the school, Minnesota School Business Official Training or Conference. This application is easy to apply for. There's funding for everyone. When we already kind of have something out there, why would we change it at this point?
Representative Grant, comment.
Thank you for that question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, it's just trying to find ways to expand the ability for schools to work on school safety. This is just, I mean, this funds have been here for quite some time. It's being able to open it back up to allow for, you know, I guess everybody, and I'm not looking at this as a partisan deal. I just feel that everybody needs to work together to make sure our schools are safer. And this, I think, bill opens up a pot of money that allows us all to work together as a legislation to bring school safety.
Representative Vernick, quick follow-up or?
No.
Okay. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think it's no surprise to anybody in this room that I am sort of the resident cybersecurity expert in that sense. And I just wanted to say, well, first I applaud the intent of creating more money. You're muting your mic. Oops, sorry. In reverse. Sorry. As the cybersecurity person in the room, I really appreciate the intent of this bill, and I really appreciate that, especially because, as some of you may be aware, I passed a bill on cyber incident reporting. We now have the first year of cyber incident reporting that has come back. I have in front of me that report in which the number one entity reporting cyber incidents through that mechanism is the K-12 system, with 81 incidents, only closely followed by the cities and counties at 69 and 53. There's a couple of things that are important about that. The first is, obviously, every time a cyber incident comes forward, we have to look at it in multiple ways, right? If we were able to thwart a cyber incident, for example, that saves very real dollars. Minute did some reporting on their cyber incidents and estimated that for about $5 million worth of investment, they saved about $300 million in costs after the fact for some of those more severe incidents. So I think there's a real value in having cybersecurity dollars and doing that. We know schools have a particular challenge in this specific department. And so I really appreciate all of that. And in fact, if we look further into the report by the types of incidents, and did I go the wrong direction here? Sorry, I must have got it to a different page. But some of the really common things that we're seeing are things that we can share across schools. So this is really great. The cybersecurity grants that went out initially I will say there was some challenges getting them out the door at first, and I think our friend here will admit that. Schools were a little bit frustrated, but once the money did start flowing, there was a real appreciation for those funds. And I want to see that certainly continue, and I think Representative Vernig is right that we fought tooth and nail to get some of this money into the hands of our school districts. It does have a specific list of things that you can use those cybersecurity funds for, and we have a simple and easy process to follow to apply for that for the exact reasons Representative Vernig mentioned as well, that it is not every school has a whole grant writing team, and so we wanted to make sure that there were really simple criteria to be able to apply, but then also make sure that the money is going to the eligible uses that we have under it. I do have some concern about opening this pool up, and in particular to our non-public schools. I'm going to be very candid about that. And the reason for that is that we have so much unmet need already within our public schools. And what I don't see here is how we're increasing the amounts or the dollars. We have a lot of dots. And as we refer to Representative Nash, he often says he likes his dots in the form of candy, but not on the page, right? And so I think that is really troublesome to me that we don't have any dollars defined. But I also am worried in that while I certainly want to support actually expanding the amount of time for another phase of those grants to use up the rest of what we've already allotted, and we should use up every last dime if we can, 100% agree. But I worry by opening this up to other entities, and when we haven't even had the first group of folks take a stab at that pool, is troubling to me, particularly because the needs that we're asking for are so immense, right? And what we saw from Representative Vernig's example is that a lot of schools, while they were eligible for considerably more, they didn't actually apply for what they were even eligible for. And schools are really hungry for these grants. So what we're doing is we're basically saying we're going to let more people into the pool, but we're not going to expand the size of the pool. And that is troubling to me in this bill in particular. Moreover, you know, we have some really tough decisions to make, folks, in the coming years. And now I'm in a fight till the death because I want cybersecurity grant money. But the reality is we have some tough decisions to make. And the question is, can we afford to expand that pool? Can we afford to put more money into it? I'm going to argue in favor of it, of course. But by expanding that pool when we haven't even met the need of the pool that we had in the first place is a little bit difficult for me to swallow. So I just want to give that tactical advice that my recommendation would be to extend the time for those grants to go out and see if we can find more funds. But for right now, I would probably we want to limit that pool. Certainly, I think we should, in fact, consider other entities in the future, but I don't want to shortchange our public schools in the near term. Thank you.
And Representative Durant, sounds like if you guys can connect offline, I'm going to go to Representative Bakeberg, then come back to you for closing comments.
Thank you.
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Uni, I just have a question on timelines. So you had said that the underlying bill was passed in the during the 23 session. Is that correct?
Mr. Ernie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bakeberg, correct.
When was the first communicate?
Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ernie, when was that? You had mentioned that there's a school leader communication sent out. When was that sent out to school leaders?
Mr. Ernie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bakeberg, the school leaders' email that I'm, or communication that I'm referencing is around the grant opportunity in July when it opened up and we were advertising it. I do believe, and I can get some information, I do believe that we had some communications about the existence of the program through our updates around the state. Our school finance team did spend a lot of time working with districts, communicating with MASBO around especially what Representative Bonner referenced around the ease of application process. So I will fully admit that this process took a lot longer than we would have liked. But we did at the same time focus on making it an ease of use application. Yes, We wish we could have gotten it out earlier, but we did focus on making it easy to use, and I think the reflections we've gotten back are that it has been. But back to your original question, the leader's email went out. I believe it was July. It opened up in the beginning of July of last year, I believe.
Representative Baker?
So July of 2025, correct?
Right.
So, and then I think, from my understanding, the first communication went out May 22nd of 2025 for school leaders across the state to make them aware of this new grant opportunity. Does that sound about accurate?
Mr. Noon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I would say in that specific format, that could be correct. I'll have to double check, but if that's what your records say in access to school leaders' email. I will say there are other venues that we did communicate about the existence of this program through, you know, I go around the state and I go to service co-ops and talk about what's in the program. So I would say in that format, that's probably the case, but we were talking about this before then.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to, this goes back to the systems conversation that we need to be very frank and honest about. So it passed in May of 2023. We had a 2023-2024 school year. No grant dollars went out because, newsflash, no one knew about it. It wasn't communicated to school leaders. So our schools did not have the opportunity to apply for these grants. Cybersecurity, we had in one of my districts, we had a significant cybersecurity incident that could have been avoided if we would have known about this. Then we got into the 2024-2025 school year, and it wasn't until May 22nd that first communication went out to school leaders. Here's what we need to understand. The end of May at school is just a little bit busy, folks. There's this thing called graduation that people aren't looking at emails from MDE to be planning for the next year. Okay, they're planning for graduation at that time. Okay, right now, you know, and then that fast forward, people are aware of it. This is my point, continues to be and will continue to be, we have got to be thinking from a system standpoint to support our schools. We cannot continue to do these one-off, frankly, pet projects for those of us around the table so that we can put it on a lit piece, so that we can go back to our community and say, "Gal, I did this." Let's start thinking from a system standpoint so that we can equip our schools, remove the mandates, remove the burdens, give them flexible funding, and let's get out of the way so they can do their job to educate our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick reminder on the 23 bill for cybersecurity. That was brought to us by the school districts who were worried about the hacking that was happening and being able to keep their schools safe and their data safe. So I ask kindly for legislators to kind of pull back on some of the vitriol.
Thank you. Representative Duran, to your bill in two words or less. And Mr. O'Neill, did you have a comment? Okay. Representative Duran, back to you. Two words or less, close.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Representative Duran. Members, with that, House File 3495 is laid over. Representative Lawrence, 3493 we're going to bring up. If we can get this bill done in 15 minutes, we'll go to Representative Curran's bill, then back to you. Well, I'll do this. If we can do it in 10 minutes, I'll do both of your bills. But at 2:30, I do want to get to the final bill, whether it's yours or Representative Curran's, based on the time. Representative Lawrence. Representative Lawrence moves House File 3493 in front of the committee to be laid over with the chair's intent. Man, I believe we have a couple testifiers. Representative Lawrence.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Carisha, fellow members. My name is Representative Brian Lawrence, and I am here today to move House File 3493. And we've had a lot of good discussion today, and I appreciate that it all revolves around keeping our students safe. All students and staff in the state of Minnesota should be given a safe environment to educate students. and to work. And so that's what I'm proposing today. This bill provides equal, safe school revenue for charter schools, cooperative schools, non-public schools, and tribal contract schools. These schools have been left out in this revenue at this point in time. They've not been included historically, and we need to step up at this point in time and open the doors for them to have revenue to help create a safe environment to educate students in. And so I'm pleased to be able to bring this bill forward. I hope we can, I've got several testifiers that have come along today to testify on behalf of this bill, but that's the crux of this bill, is including these educational entities in safe school revenue.
Thank you.
With that.
Thank you, Representative Lawrence. And we have several testifiers. And members, I do want to make sure this is a public hearing, that we get to the testifiers as best possible. So if you have questions when we get to those, please be very concise. The first testifier I have is Ms. Proctor.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. My name is Callie Proctor. I'm a Minneapolis mom, and my child attends Annunciation Catholic School. And he was in the church basement with his preschool class on August 27th when someone went there to kill children. And I am here as a proponent of advancing this bill, and I really thank you for hearing me out today. So one of the most difficult things after the shooting for my family, because praise God my child was physically unharmed, was that it was immediately politicized. So it was a huge disservice to families and students and the community. And so I'm just asking if you can briefly take off your bipartisan political hats for like a minute here. And just remember that when something terrifying happens, a child is not thinking about whether or not he attends a public school or a religious school or a tribally affiliated school. He's simply terrified. And it is not the job of the child to bear the burden of politics or adult decisions or the unfortunate and insane cultural moment that we find ourselves in, and the reason that we're in this room trying to react to it. It's not their job. And I think they deserve better. And I will just say one more thing, and it's that my son is too young to really understand the gravity of what happened that day, and he asks about it occasionally. And last night he happened to say, Mommy, do you remember that day a bad guy came to school? And yes, I definitely remember. And it reminded me that he loves scary stuff. He always has. He loves bad guys, as he says, and monsters and villains. And prior to August 27th, he was always very comfortable in knowing that it was all pretend. And I'll never forget coming home that day and having him ask me if a monster was at his school. Because in that moment, it wasn't pretend anymore. And I guess from my perspective, if there's anything reasonable or logical that we can do to mitigate that loss of innocence or, you know, God forbid the loss of life, then we should probably just do it. So thank you so much for hearing me and watching me melt down up here. And I thank you all for the work you're doing.
Thank you, Ms. Proctor. I really don't have any good words other than I just want to thank you for your courage. There's no way I can ever try to conceptualize what your family and that community went through. So thank you very much. And
thank you.
I can't speak for the committee, but I'll speak for myself and say that your words are very profound and helpful. So thank you. Ms. Mitchell. I'm sorry. We have another testifier up. If you state your name, I'll go to you. And then Ms. Mitchell, you'll be the next one up.
Yeah, Simon Osmond.
Mr. Osmond, did I get that right?
Close, three syllables, Osamo. Like the Wizard of Oz, Osamo.
If it's okay, I'm going to say to the testifier. So thank you.
Yes,
I'll get
yes.
That. To the testifier.
Hi, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Simon Osmo. I'm a CEO and founder of Kings of Security Consulting, a Twin Cities-based risk management firm focused on school safety. Before Kingswood, I was a British detective, including work with MI5 on a liquid bomb terrorism plot in 2006. I later led counterterrorism efforts at Mall of America, and my team supports schools in Minnesota and across 16 other states. I'm here today in support of House File 3493, which would provide school safety and security funding for all schools, public, private, and charter. When it comes to school safety, the most important word is holistic. Holistic school safety is the difference between having pieces of a plan and having a system that actually works. Holistic safety means threat assessment, training, emergency plans, all working together. We saw the need for that readiness at the Annunciation school shooting in August of 2025. A holistic and comprehensive plan includes preparation, implementation, and execution. That's why I support House File 3493, which includes a per pupil formula that sets a baseline of safety supporting every student, be they in a public, non-public, charter, or tribal school. Funds should focus on what actually works: threat assessment, training, planning, early intervention, mental health, and security technology. We should measure progress through training completed, drills practiced, and both communication systems and reunification plans. I encourage clear guardrails for accountability, require a school to have a vulnerability assessment before the funds are spent, define what allowable use categories there are, and require simple reporting on what was implemented, who was trained, and how safety was improved. For these reasons, I respectfully ask you to support House File 3493 and ensure security funding eligibility includes all schools, so every student, regardless of where they attend school, can learn in a safe and secure environment. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you for your testimony. If you'd stand by for possible questions, that'd be great. Shannon Mitchell and Tammy Ratcliffe. If I can have both of you come up. And go ahead and state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Shannon Mitchell, and I am the Policy Director for the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We support extending safe schools revenue or safety aid for public charter schools. And this is not new. We have been here year after year asking the legislature to do this. And we, in the past years, have really appreciated the bipartisan reception that charter schools being included in this funding stream has received, and the leadership on both sides of the aisle on including charter schools for the safe funding these streams. We really think it's critical. Charter schools have to use their general education budget to do safety upgrades. And in a time where that equation is just becoming more difficult to take money out of the classroom to do the safety upgrades, as there are rising costs across the board, charter schools receive less funding because they can't levy. They can't levy to do safety upgrades, and they don't receive safety aid. So this is becoming a pretty major issue. So we really ask that this is the year, because there's been such bipartisan support in the past, we really hope this is the year that it happens. It's really hard to go back to school leaders and families and students, which you will hear from, and say that it didn't happen this year. So please, respectfully, we ask that you make this the year, and I will let the students say it best. Thank you, Chair, members.
Thank you for your testimony. And if you state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
My name is Tammy Ratcliffe, and I had a full testimony ready to go, but what better way to talk to you than let my eighth grade students advocate for what we want. So first off, we're going to have April Dressel.
Welcome to the committee, April. Ms. Dressel, and if you state your name for the record, please begin your testimony.
My name is April Dressel, and I'm an eighth grader at North Star Academy. North Star has given me so many opportunities and friendships. I don't think I'd be who I am today without it. I've gained friends, and at the same time, it's a safe space. After 9 years, North Star is still an amazing school with phenomenal teachers and friends that feel like family. Keep in mind, these are only a few things that make North Star special. The community at North Star is a diverse place where I can learn about different cultures and perspectives through classes and extracurriculars. One thing that stuck out in particular was Knowledge Bowl. Through it, I've been able to meet people that can excel my learning experience and teach me things about the world I never thought I'd know. In contrast to that, dangers in schools can take away a student's ability to learn. When I was in fourth grade, I experienced my first ever lockdown, and I remember it like this. I was in the art room with my friends when a choppy voice came over the intercom. Lockdown, lockdown. I watched as the teacher grabbed buckets of clay off the cabinet and used them to block the door, and then pushed more things like tables and chairs into the barricade. I'd only ever experienced this kind of a thing in a drill, and was always told it would never actually happen. I had joined a group of friends under a curtain as they held a broom, praying and crying, and watched as other classes outside evacuated into the woods and wished I was them. I sat under that curtain and asked if I could call my mom and tell her I loved her as I saw kids grabbing scissors after hearing the police are in the building. I didn't think silence could be so loud. All clear, the voice said, as students stood up and cheered, a moment so surreal it stuck with me forever. The next few months were full of stress. Every time I heard the announcement sound over the speakers, I recoiled in fear, even going as far as asking my mom to keep me home from school on the day of a lockdown drill. This story is my way of asking you to please consider helping our school to be able to have safe schools funding for generations of kids that will go to our school so they never have to worry about or go through the things I experienced. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And for your name for the record, and begin your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Camilla Bowman, and I'm an eighth grader at North Star Academy. North Star has made me comfortable in my own skin by starting a unity club for young black kids like me. The club has taught me about my culture and made me comfortable in who I am today. And who I am today is an educated young black woman. Teachers not only focus on our learning, but focus on the students' mental health. Around 20% of kids aged 12 to 17, which includes many middle schoolers, suffer from a diagnosed mental or behavioral health condition or anxiety. Roughly 50% of students in this age group identify stress or anxiety as a significant obstacle to learning. How are these students expected to learn and concentrate on a lesson when they are not even comfortable in their own skin? As someone who has had mental health issues starting at a young age, the problem of mental health and finding a solution to help kids with it is more than just advocacy to me. In fifth grade is when my mental health journey started. I was only 10 years old when thoughts of suicide came to my head. Mental health issues made everyday life hard, and the joy of getting out of bed was gone. By late sixth and seventh grade, I was 11 to 12 years old and had already made attempts to take my own life. I didn't think I would make it to 14. And now in 3 months, I turn 14. North Star and the teachers there, especially Caitlin Hofschultz, have helped me get better and make me want to keep going. If Caitlin Hofschultz wouldn't have stopped me in the hallway and helped me through my problems and made me see self-worth, I would not be here telling you this speech. Not a lot of students have adults like this. Caitlin Hofschultz is not just my teacher. She's the reason why I'm still here today. There are lots of more students at North Star that could tell you of teachers that made them want to come to school and learn, that made them want to keep going. Lots of students have stories just like mine. I know family and friends that have dealt with the same issues that I have. Now that I am stable, I make sure that no person around me has to go through mental battles that I did. And people that are going through mental battles with themselves are not alone. Students should not feel like the idea of death is a solution to stress. The idea of our future, getting assignments turned in and passing, is already challenging. Students should not be fighting to stay alive on top of that. Students' mental health matters, and we need a solution. These students are our future. No child should want to die before they got a chance to live.
Thank you both for your testimony. Very powerful, and I appreciate your resilience and your courage, and well done. Next testifier is Tim Benz and Nathan Flansburg.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Mr. Benz, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tim Benz, and I am president of Independent. We are the largest statewide organization serving the non-public school community. We have 187 member schools, which serve more than 42,000 and thousands of staff and families as well. We are here to support House File 3493, which extends school safety and security funding to students and all students across Minnesota. Beginning in 2020, Independent, along with our fellow non-public school partners, have advocated extending school safety to all sectors of schools. House File 3493 does just that and would provide stable, reliable, and flexible resources to help schools prepare, respond, and administer, and as Mr. Azemo mentioned, holistic and comprehensive plans for school communities. This legislation allows for a wide range of uses, including security improvements, staff training, and counseling. For more than 50 years, Minnesota has made an equitable commitment to students in every educational setting for certain essential services, including busing, counseling, nursing, and learning materials. Language included in these statutes references it is in the public interest so that the health, welfare, and safety of the children while using the public highways of the state shall be promoted, or every school pupil in the state should share equitably in education benefits. These statutes affirm certain programs are for the common good for all students in Minnesota. Safe and secure schools are a primary common good. Threats to schools continue, as you all know, including a recently one to a non-public school in Woodbury. What happened at Annunciation Catholic School must never happen again. The time is now to enact legislation that provides stable, reliable, and flexible resources to all schools to help ensure a safe and secure learning environment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Flansburgh.
Chairs and committee members, my name is Dr. Nathan Flansburgh, and I'm the superintendent of PAC Charter Schools, a multi-site K-12 district serving almost 1,500 students located in Ramsey, Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I would like to begin by thanking you for your time, your thoughtful consideration, and your continued service to the students of Minnesota. Crafting policy that strengthens our educational system is complex and often challenging work, and we are grateful for your commitment to getting it right. I'm here today because school safety is not optional. In today's world, it is foundational. Every student who walks through our doors deserves to feel secure, supported, and protected. And every educator deserves to work in an environment where safety is a given, not a gamble. But safety should never come at the expense of classroom instruction. Every public school student in Minnesota deserves both a safe environment and strong academic support. Yet under current law, charter school students are excluded from safety aid funding, forcing us to make impossible choices between investing in critical safety measures and preserving the academic supports our students need to succeed. That inequity is why I'm here urging your support for House File 3493. These supports aren't optional extras. They're essential elements of a safe and responsive learning environment in 2026 and beyond. We cannot simply shift other funds to cover these costs, because charter schools already face broader funding inequities. As you know, charter schools cannot levy locally, which means we rely more heavily on state and federal funding streams that are uneven across both programs. This inequity makes it especially difficult for charter schools to absorb new safety costs without direct aid. Every Minnesota student deserves to learn in a school where they feel safe, physically, emotionally, and digitally. My students and staff deserve to feel safe. I respectfully ask you to support House File 3493 and ensure that charter schools are included in safety aid funding. Our charter school teachers and students are beyond grateful for your bipartisan support, ensuring school safety for every Minnesota student. Keeping students safe should never be a partisan issue. It is a shared responsibility and a moral obligation. Your willingness to work across the aisle to prioritize safe learning environments sends a powerful message to families, educators, and communities that student well-being comes first. That commitment makes a real difference in our schools, and we sincerely appreciate your leadership on this critical issue. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Sabrina Williams and Lisa Olson, and we'll go to member questions. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Representative Lawrence, your testifier can begin. We'll just go ahead and start with who's at the microphone.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. You can hear me okay. My name is Sabrina Williams, and I'm honored to have served as the founder and executive director of Excel Academy for Higher Learning Public Charter School in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Just a side note, charter schools are public schools. For the past 25 years, we have proudly served pre-K through eighth grade students and families as we celebrate our legacy of changing tomorrows for children today. It is truly a privilege to be here with you this afternoon. I am here today to ask for your support to include public charter schools and safety aid funding in Minnesota. As you've heard, currently, under the current law, chartered public schools are excluded from receiving this funding. I respectfully ask you to change that. All Minnesota students deserve equally safe learning environments, no matter which public school they attend. A child's safety, mental health, and well-being should not depend on the type of public school their family chooses. I believe I heard one of the representatives say something similar to that today. Public charter school students are public school students. They deserve the same level of support and protection
as any other child in our state. At Excel Academy, this funding would directly allow us to hire and sustain a licensed counselor, psychologist, or a licensed social worker. Since COVID-19, and then again, especially since the past 2 months with the ICE surge, we have seen a significant and ongoing increase in student mental health needs. Anxiety, depression, trauma, and behavioral challenges are affecting our students at younger ages and in more complex ways. Our staff also feel the weight of supporting these growing needs while maintaining strong academic outcomes. Safety today is not just about secured entrances and emergency protocols, although that is very important. It is also about having qualified mental health professionals in the building who can intervene early, de-escalate crisis, and provide consistent preventative support. When students feel emotionally safe and supported, they are better able to focus, learn, and thrive. This funding would have a direct and meaningful impact on the daily safety and stability of our school community. We cannot simply shift other funds to cover these costs. As was previously said, chartered public schools already experience broader funding inequities, largely because we cannot levy for additional revenue like traditional districts can. That structural limitation leaves us with fewer options and forces difficult trade-offs between essential services. This is about equity. It is about families. It is about fairness. And most importantly, it is about Minnesota's children. Many students and staff deserve, or all of our students and staff, mine especially, along with all the ones in Minnesota, deserve to feel safe. I respectfully ask you to support safety aid funding for public chartered school students. Thank you so much for your time and your continued commitment to all of our Minnesota students. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your patience. I know you were here early before the committee, so thank you for waiting. Ms. Olson, Lisa Olson, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Lisa Olson. Thank you, Chair Krisha, Joachim, and committee members. I'm Lisa Olson, a licensed teacher from ISD 728 Elk River Area Schools, where we serve more than 13,000 students in 20 schools by 1,000 teachers. I'm here today to share the unintended consequences of supporting Representative Lawrence's bill. I live in Representative Lawrence's district, which includes some of our ISD 728 schools, where our school district's legislative agenda includes increasing equitable and stable funding of our public schools. But today's bills would ultimately decrease student support while hoping to increase safety funding. While increasing safety funding sounds good in theory, the bill's funding doesn't stop at our public schools, as you know. The bill proposes public taxpayer dollars be shared with charter and private schools, which lack some of the same public oversight and accountability that our taxpayers expect in our public schools. A side effect of these types of initiatives are being experienced right now in ISD 728. Our school board recently took action to budget for a $4.9 million budget cut in the 26-27 school year. These cuts include many things, but the ones that will impact our students the most are the cutting of one of only three prevention and safety coordinators, the cutting of the only English language learner coordinator, the cutting of two student support specialists, and the elimination of 11 teachers. This is a big deal. 11 teachers and fewer key staff who work with some of our most vulnerable and those who work to keep us safe are being eliminated because of lack of funding. Now, how in the world can an educator like me sit here and propose that we stand against funding safety initiatives? But no matter where it goes, it's important to think about. I, too, walked by those empty desks on the front lawn, each one of them empty in a very painful way. I oppose this bill to stand for refusing to eliminate funding for positions like counselors, social workers, teachers, support specialists, prevention and safety authorities, who directly support and keep our public school students safe. If you truly want to keep our schools safe, I urge you to support House Files 3435, 3433, and 3402, which would protect our students from ICE, assault rifles, and high-capacity magazines. Consider supporting the gun violence prevention package released today. Supporting today's bill means that you might be okay with more safety cuts in our public schools, more staffing cuts in our public schools, and giving more to private schools who could have already spent their dollars on safety. Please support spending public tax dollars on public schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, that concludes the testimonies. I'm going to go to Co-Chair Joachim and then Representative Raywar for a close, and then Representative Lawrence, if you can give us the golden two-word close, that'd be great. Chair Joachim.
Thank you. Actually, Mr. Chair, I just had to ask Mr. Strom more of a technical question. As we all, you know, those of us who have been on education long enough know that $36 a student is the levy cap that we put on our public schools for this, and they have to levy. They get no aid for this funding stream. For years, we've been looking at trying to raise that levy cap, but because we cannot raise property taxes in here, we always have to offset that. So the idea of adding aid is a good one, and we'll probably hear bills to hear that moving forward. But I would like to, Representative Lawrence, if you would consider working, if we worked on this bill together, of raising that cap for our public schools, because part of it is the number of students and the math and how it works. My question for Mr. Strom actually is on the cooperative intermediate district interaction, because $36 for a school district that is a member of a cooperative unit, but we do the $15 under cooperative intermediate, and how many students would be served by the cooperative units and intermediates and the non-public schools compared to how many in our public schools? I know that's a lot of back-of-the-napkin math, and maybe you can get us that information later, but just to touch on that interaction.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Chair Joachim, there's about, as a quick answer, and I'll send a memo to the committee, there's about 72,000 non-public students in the state, so $36 times that number would be about $2.6 million. There's slightly more charter school students, about 78,000 charter school students, and that same $36 times those students would be $2.8 million. In terms of the cooperatives, I'll need to try and summarize this differently. The way the levy works is because the students served by the cooperatives still remain enrolled generally in their home school districts, the funding for the $15 per student in intermediate districts is based on their members. And that levy is about $4 million a year times the pupil count of the member districts. I'll need to do some work to give you a similar number for the other cooperatives at the $36 range. But I would expect that would be somewhere in that $4 to $8 million range.
Thank you, Mr. Strom.
And Representative Raywar, if you can be quick with a close so I can get Representative Raywar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take a moment to thank Ms. Proctor for coming here today. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for testifying, and especially thank you for centering us back on what's important. And I want you to know I do believe that we all want to keep the kids safe, although we may have different ideas on how to do that. And I just ask the committee and our legislature as a whole to listen to the enunciation, students, parents, and community voices, and that we do work together to come to some bipartisan agreements and keep our kids safe. Thank you.
And Representative Raywar. Representative Lawrence, if you can make your golden close, that'd be great.
Golden close. Thank you to the testifiers as well. We're going to talk about a lot of safe school ideas in the next few weeks, months ahead of us. This is one in a step in a right direction. These students are left out. These areas are left out. We need to close this gap. So this is a step in the right direction as we proceed with this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lawrence. And with that, the chair lays House File 3493 over. And I'll be moving to Representative Kernsville next, which will be House File 3602.
Yep.
3602. And while we do that, members and committee members, if we can just give to Representative Ray Roberts, can we give a quick acknowledgement to Ms. Proctor for coming before you step out? All right. With that, the chair moves House File 3602 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay it over. I believe, Representative Kern, you do have an author's amendment, and I'll move the author's amendment.
Yes, I do have an author's amendment. Would you like
author's amendment. Any discussion to the A1 author's amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The A1 is adopted. Representative Kern, to your bill, and we do have a hard stop in 8 minutes. I apologize. So I want to get through you and the testifiers and get to the close. And Representative Witte, welcome to the committee. So Representative Kern, two-year bill, House File 3602 is in front of the committee.
Excellent. Well, first, Chair Crenshaw, thank you so much for taking time to hear this bill today. I'm not going to read the entire remarks that I have. But I want to also thank co-presenter Representative Witte and you, Chair Crenshaw, for being on this bill. I think what we're here today to do is just offer yet another potential solution or potential language that we can use as a legislature in the sort of political environment that we're in to continue conversations about what the different resources are that are existing in Minnesota and what's the potential, what are some potential avenues that we can pursue with those resources. So, one step is to ensure that all schools have a plan that is evidence-based. I recognize that the language in front of us, I think on both sides and members for a variety of reasons, which is why we're laying the bill over, and I thank you for that. We've had some really good discussions, and I think we can get to a really good place when it comes to school safety. And I feel so far that this bill is an example of some good work that's moving forward. So I want to thank you for that opportunity. Not to eat up more time, I'll turn it over to my co-presenter.
Thank you very much. And I hope I've signaled my willingness to try to work on this and get it through. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Crenshaw, Chair Joachim, and members. As Representative Curran said, this is an opportunity to do something small and build our way out, build some trust, figure out some solutions for our students. And Section 2 of this bill is why I was excited to sign on, particularly after we adopted the author's amendment to add a school resource officer to the council. As a former school resource officer, I know how important relationships with trusted adults, engaged students, are to foster an environment that is safer for all students in a school. The School Safety Advisory Council established in this bill includes students, young survivors of school or community violence, parents, mental health professionals, the school safety center, and law enforcement. The advisory council is charged with advising the school safety center on needs of students and school officials, but also new innovative opportunities that come from each person's unique perspective on safety in schools. One of my experience of building trust in the school was as a school resource officer, I handed candy dish, and thank God kids like candy. And also the staff and the people around the school, they came in and talked, and we worked together to make our schools safer. So in closing, I just want to say thank you. We have Aurora Vasquez here from Sandy Hook Promise to talk about how the evidence-based approach is best practice from what they see as a leading organization on school safety across the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Representative Witte. And if I could get the testifiers up, Aurora Vasquez and Ms. Doslin and Mr. Kaufman. I do have a very, very hard stop in 5 minutes, so we're going to go through quickly, and then I'll go back to you, Representative Kern, for the golden two-word close. Ms. Vasquez, state your name for the record, and please begin your testimony.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Crenshaw. Members of the committee, my name is Aurora Vasquez.
I'm the Senior Vice President of State Policy at Sandy Hook Promise. Before I jump in, I'd like to thank co-sponsors for bringing forward House File 3602 as it dovetails to Sandy Hook Promise's hope of seeing Minnesota schools transition toward evidence-based school safety plans. Sandy Hook Promise was formed by families who lost a loved one at the Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14th, 2012. Our North Star is clear: prevent school shootings. Our commitment: ensure all schools have access to proven prevention measures that will keep children safe. But to be clear, our vision does not promote or require physical modification of school buildings or grounds. But we do recommend that before such changes happen, there be evidence demonstrating they will do what they purport to do. What our vision does focus on is strengthening Minnesota's existing requirement that school boards and charter schools adopt a crisis management policy to address potential violent crisis situations. This law focuses on things like cardiac emergencies, tornadoes, fire drills, school lockdown drills. And that's a great start. The next step: narrowing in on a subset of crises, specifically human-caused safety incidents, such as mass shootings targeting students. We've learned, and following enunciation, you all have probably also learned, that in the shadow of a school shooting, a lot of school safety solutions surface, and some make their way into schools' crisis management policies. But what if there isn't evidence showing that those new approaches will or even can work as promised? So no matter what a school safety plan is called, it's time to ensure that the piece that pertains to human-caused safety incidents is grounded in evidence-based safety responses. So let's not wait until a school shooting is unfolding to test effectiveness, and let's not wait until a school shooting is unfolding to learn that a more prudent choice ought to have been made. House File 3602 is the right next step. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Kaufman, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, and please begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Rick Kaufman. I am speaking today on behalf of member districts of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I've spent the last three decades working with schools on crisis response, prevention, recovery, including the past 19 years with Bloomington Public Schools as their Executive Director of Emergency Management. Previously worked in school systems in Wisconsin and Colorado, the latter where I served as the crisis response team lead to the Columbine High School, helping rescue and triage operations. I appreciate the direction of this legislation. The focus is on prevention, mental health, and evidence-based practices reflect where school safety must continue to go. We know today that safety is not just about how schools respond to emergencies. It's what we do long before that crisis occurs, how we identify concerns early, how we support students in distress, and how we intervene before harm even happens. This bill recognizes that, and we support it. However, Minnesota already requires districts to maintain crisis management policies. This proposal does not replace that system, but it creates a second parallel framework with new review and reporting requirements. When schools are asked to manage overlapping systems, attention can shift from strengthening safety to managing compliance. However, we have an opportunity here to modernize and strengthen our existing statute and bring prevention, behavioral threat assessment, mental health, and evidence-based standards into one coherent framework. I do have a concern additionally is the capacity. While this legislation positively strengthens the Minnesota School Safety Center, it does not provide dedicated funding for school-based behavioral threat assessment teams or the training required to do that work well. Those teams are the backbone of prevention. They cannot function as unfunded add-on responsibilities. Safety is not delivered by statute. It is delivered by principals and psychologists, social workers, counselors, and school and district leaders. Plans only work when people are supported, trained, and given time to carry them out. Finally, I strongly encourage you to add experienced school safety leaders to the proposed advisory council that's in this current language. Student, survivor, parent, and mental health voices are essential, but so is implementation expertise. Policy works best when lived experience is paired with operational knowledge. So I offer these comments in partnership. The intent of the bill is very strong. With alignment between expectations and funding and practice, it can be even stronger. Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee, for your leadership, to the bill authors, and her commitment to our students and staff.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. And to the bill author, the golden close, please.
Just thank you again so much for allowing us time. This is just piece of the puzzle when we're talking about school safety, and I look forward to the conversation that will happen in about 15 minutes in this room on some other ways that we can prevent gun violence prevention.
Very good. Thanks for the testimony. And with that, House File 3602 is laid over. And members, a quick announcement before I adjourn. We do need to clear the room so that the next committee can come in. There's a large amount of people. And with that, Education Finance is adjourned until February 26th.